prepared.
I am Dave Champion.
I don't have my stuff together. Are we rolling?
This
I don't
is
have
my
stuff together.
This is my co-host, Phil Carnes, and we are exemplifying that
totally
we are
unprepared.
Totally unprepared.
I don't have my stuff together. My mic isn't right.
No, no, you are a mess. All right.
All right.
So I think what everyone's going to is on the lips of everybody right now is the outcome of the Iowa election, the primary in Iowa.
The caucus in Iowa.
The caucus in Iowa. Is there a difference between caucus and primary?
There is, yes. A caucus is run by parties, and it's where you come in and everybody discusses things, and they do so. And each caucus process is a little different state by state that have it. A primary is voting. You go to your voting booth and you press a button.
Oh,
a caucus is an open discussion within the precinct which you live, which is the smallest. Precinct is the smallest political substructure there is. You got precincts within a county, and then you've got the counties within the state. Of course, the states within the union.
So, do caucuses end up at the closing bell, so to speak, with a vote?
Yes.
Okay. Is that in place of a primary?
In place of a primary. As a matter of fact, you actually have, like, Colorado is a caucus state. And in some states, you have a presidential preference poll, like what happens in Iowa, what will be happening in Nevada. And I'll talk about that more in my segment. But in Colorado, they've actually decided to do away with the presidential preference poll. The people that come and participate at the actual caucus will have voices in who they want to select for their presidential nominee.
Okay. And people who don't show up don't.
If people don't show up, you don't get a voice, no.
Okay. Yeah. So what did happen in Iowa? Let's look at the outcome.
Well, we had Ted Cruz finished first. Donald Trump finished second. A very close third was Marco Rubio, followed by Ben Carson and Rand Paul. Those are your top five. The top three got double digits. Everybody else got single digits or smaller. And, of course, with the Democrats, you had a 0.2% difference between Clinton and Sanders. And a lot of claims that the Clinton supporters were doing some janky things. There's 99 separate counties that are there. And they claim that in 90 different precincts within the 1,700 or so that are in Iowa, that 90 different precincts, some very janky things happened, all favoring Clinton. And, of course, when there's a tie in Iowa, they do a coin toss. There were six of those, six different precincts, and Clinton won all six of those coin tosses.
Which I saw a mathematician commented and said the odds that anybody would win six coin tosses in a row is 1 in 64.
Yeah.
So either there's tremendous luck or something else.
And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, everybody puts all this big emphasis on Iowa. And Iowa has only whoever's won their caucus has only gone on to win the presidency, as I've been told, twice. Now, I might be a little bit off, but I was told by a very reliable source twice in history. So big deal. It's like in NASCAR, everybody puts in a whole bunch into the first race of the season, Daytona 500, coming up in another couple, 2-3 weeks. And at Daytona, they put in sometimes 20% of their annual budget on this one race. It never gives the outcome of the season champion. It's really not that big a deal. Same thing with Iowa.
Yeah. Iowa's the first voice. So
it's the first voice, yeah. And because you have a caucus there, and then 8 days later, you have a primary.
That's New Hampshire, yes.
The opposite end of the spectrum on how things work in New Hampshire. It'll be interesting where Trump is leading by 20 points at this point.
Well, I'll tell you, there's some things that I find interesting about the outcome in Iowa. Number one, when you looked at the national polling on Trump, the impression you'd get is that he was unbeatable. You know, he was marching on to victory and nothing was going to stop him in the first shot. He didn't win.
Right.
So I found that interesting. It's like, so how valuable are these polls?
Yeah.
Secondly, that Rubio was as close to Trump as he was, I found surprising, again, given the polls.
Oh, yeah. We're talking within, I think, one percentage they were.
And then on the Democrat side, okay, I make no predictions or presumptions about who's going to win or lose, but I think it speaks to the weakness of the Hillary campaign that Bernie Sanders came within a thin red hair of her.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Because I think the RNC would have liked to have believed, and I think some old establishment Democrats would have liked to have believed that she would have completely trounced him. And I think there was a lot of commentary by political watchers in the media that that was likely to be the outcome. And yet it turned out to be bogus.
You know what I find to be interesting is one of the strong bases that Bernie Sanders has. Now, on the political spectrum, you got Bernie Sanders all the way on one side. Rand Paul, who announced Wednesday that he was suspending his campaign, which is different than dropping out of the race. But he's all the way on the other side. But both of them have very strong bases in the university student pool, young voters.
Yes.
So you've got them, I mean, almost polar opposites, politically speaking. There are some similarities with some of the things they do, but that's more human nature than politics.
You know, somebody told me something years ago, you may have heard this slogan. If you weren't a liberal when you were young, you have no soul. If you're still a liberal when you're an adult, you have no brain.
Interesting enough.
People are going to be shooting at me on the streets now.
Perhaps I have no soul. I have never been a liberal.
Nor have I.
I have never soaked up to that sort of mantra. And the idea of free this and free that, anybody who has any grasp realizes there's nothing in the world that's free. Everything has a cost. It's just a matter of where it comes from. Oh, the government will pay for it. Where does the government get their money? They either borrow it or they take it from us.
Yep.
That's it. And we're on the hook for all of it. So there's no such thing as free. We could have everything in the world free. You don't have to pay for groceries or schooling or your car or gas or anything. But everything that you work for is going into the big kitty, mm-hmm. and however much you put in is how much you're going to be allowed percentage-wise to take out. Unless, of course, you end up with something like that. What was it? Was it the Noble Engine Company? I forget in Ayn Rand's book. Atlas Shrugged. What was the name of the engine company?
I've read that book years ago.
Yeah, it was the engine company, the car company, and they went back and they found out that, you know, it collapsed because they were having everybody got the same amount of money, whether you worked hard or you didn't work at all. And the hard workers were put in place to work extra shifts to cover for the lazy people who did nothing.
There's a more current example. A guy that owns a business, this goes back several months ago.
The guy in Tacoma.
Right, $70,000
a year
right.
for the credit card processing.
And he realized that's a big problem.
Yeah, he's living in a rented room that was converted out of somebody's garage.
Now, let's shift gears dramatically.
Okay.
Talk about Pittsburgh and this cop.
Oh, yeah. Pittsburgh Police. PPD.
Yeah. Now, one of the reasons people may say, why do you and Bill talk so much about police violence and police corruption and police lying and police brutality? Because I personally think it's going to be an issue that if we don't solve it, it's going to cause violence in the streets. And I mean by the citizens attacking law enforcement. And
it's already begun. It's just a matter of how far it's going to go.
Right. And a complete dissociation of the people from its government if cops are not reined in, which is why we think this is so important. So there's a stadium. They're having a sporting event. A young 19-year-old guy shows up. He's had a few drinks. He wants to go in. The security says no. Apparently he was a little bit crocked. No, you're not going in, and leave. Now, at first he said, no, I'm not going to leave. Then, and so they get on the radio, they call the cop, the sergeant that's assigned to the stadium. Okay. So in the meantime, he changes his mind and says, I'm going to leave. And as he's walking away, the sergeant comes around the corner. Okay. And says, hey, come back over here. Okay. First of all, how counterproductive is this? I want the guy to leave.
And you're calling him back.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right. And so the story that the sergeant tells is that, number one, the suspect lunged at him. The suspect struck him in the chest. The suspect grabbed him by his jacket. And that in part of his arrest report, he says the suspect placed one foot to the rear, bladed off, which would be a combat stance, mm-hmm. and then rocked up on the balls of his feet, which if anybody understands fighting, that's the profile you need to fight.
It's okay. Incumbent.
This is all in the sergeant's arrest report. Okay. So let's look and see what really went down.
This is surveillance video.
Yeah. Go ahead now.
So here we go. Cop showed up. There's security.
No, I don't see
there.
Any leg going back. I don't see any hands coming. Oh!
He just pushed him onto the ground.
What do you know?
Now what does he do? Now that he's on the ground, he's just talking.
He starts to get up.
Smack.
Boom.
Pushes him back down again.
Starts to get up. Boom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah, boom.
Him over, kicking him. Smacking him. Punching him in the face. Now this is what we call battery.
Yeah.
And it's in total contradiction to the written report, which is called perjury.
Now, how many men are present there aside from the suspect?
What are there?
That'd be
three, four.
Four. Okay, thanks, Noah.
So what we have is when a cop fills out his arrest report, the declaration of arrest.
Yeah, and get ready to cue that up one more time, by the way.
It says, under the penalty of perjury, the undersigned attests the following. Now, perjury in any state in the union is a felony. So that's if you're lying under oath, if you're lying. Now, keep in mind, you pull up any cop that's ever written a few dozen reports and you analyze that. If you had audio, video, everything leading up to there and after, you're going to find that most cops have committed some level of perjury or another, some far more than others. That douchebag cop that arrested me, McGill, he lied throughout almost his entire report.
There was a New York retired detective who said some of the greatest American fiction appears in police reports.
Absolutely. And so this cop did the same thing. There's a lot of cops that do this, and the thing is that's what's wrong.
Okay. Now, let's let the audience look at it again. You and I have looked at this tape a couple of times, okay?
Right.
So remember, the accusation was that the guy was in a combat stance. He'd bladed off. He was up on the balls of his feet. And then that he struck the officer.
He hit him, grabbed his jacket.
Right, right. Yeah. So, Noah, let's just play that again. And are we seeing any of that? I don't see. Boom!
Yeah.
I don't mean to laugh. Thank you, Noah. But clearly, this cop is absolutely full of crap.
Yeah, he's the aggressor, which there's a lot of people out there. I know some, you know some. Some of them are cops or former cops, and a lot of them are not. But they just always take the side of being a cop.
Yeah.
Always.
And with four adult large males present, why was that necessary to walk him off the property?
I have no idea. Why was it necessary to stop him? Your goal was for him to leave.
Right, and he was doing so.
Yeah, exactly. My goal is, I had showed up on scenes when I was a cop where, you know, same sort of thing. You get a call from security. Look, we're having trouble with so-and-so. We wanted him to go. Okay, where is he? Well, he walked down that way. All right, well, call us if he comes back.
Yeah, and
I'm gone.
The DA, to his credit, filed criminal charges against this officer. The officer quite wisely chose trial by judge, and a corrupt judge found him not guilty of all the charges.
And the room full of cops that were in
exploded in applause.
They didn't want justice. They wanted to be vindicated.
For their fellow liar.
We'll be right back.
We are back, and now it's time for I'm going to start this a little bit differently today. Normally, I introduce this subject first, and today I'm not. I'm going to introduce this subject as we go along. But I would like to tell you a story, and this pertains to local Nye County business, but I think it's illustrative to everyone. So in this story, there is a young man, 23 years of age. He is honest, straightforward, hardworking, never used drugs, doesn't have a criminal record. And by drugs, I mean hard drugs. I could care less if the guy's young or old, smoke weed or have a cocktail, irrelevant. So good guy, very solid, 23 years old. And he goes to a secondhand store here in Pahrump. And he's known the owner for some time, and he's helped out around there and so forth. And he's in the store one day, and he sees a mixer. Now, this is the kind of item that like a musician would take, and they'd put like the keyboard in and the guitar in and then out to another where they're going to do the recording, a mixer. Okay. And it's got stickers all over it and a button's missing. It's clearly very used. And so he says to the store owner, how much for this item? Because he's a musician. He's an artist. He's a musician. He actually teaches music for a living. So he says to the owner, how much for this? Thinks he could use it. The owner says, it doesn't actually belong to me. Somebody brought it by, and somebody who I purchased secondhand goods from in the past. But I didn't have time to look at it, so this gal left it here so I could look at it when I had time. So the young man says to the owner, well, do you think we could call this gal? I'd like to make her an offer. Oh, yeah, sure. So they're trying to get a hold of her, and the young man goes and calls actually a professional musician that he knows, somebody who actually had a hit song and retired here to Pahrump, and says, hey, do you think this mixer would be good? He says, yeah, that's a good quality mixer. So the young man goes back to the store, and they've gotten a hold of the lady now, and she comes down to the store, and he offers her $150 for this mixer. And she accepts it. He gives her the $150, and he takes the mixer. Takes the mixer home, and over a couple of weeks period, he starts messing around with it, and he discovers that while it's a good quality mixer, for his purposes, it doesn't do anything more for him than the mixer he already owns. So he doesn't need two mixers. He decides he's going to sell one of them. So he does a little research on the internet, and he determines the one that he had just bought secondhand, actually, he could probably do better selling that one through the used market than he could the original one he owned. So he actually takes it down to a local pawn shop, and they buy it from him for $200. Wow, he made $50 on the deal. So this is where the story, you would think it would end. However, that's not how it ends. Somebody shopping in the pawn shop looks and sees this mixer there, very noticeable with the missing button and the stickers all over it, and he realizes, wow, that's the mixer that was stolen from that burglary at our church. And you can imagine the next thing, the cops are involved. And so the cops want to know from the pawn dealer who sold him that. So a couple weeks go by, and they show up on it late on a Friday afternoon at this young man's house, and they start very aggressively interviewing him, rather than just saying, hey, tell us the story. I've conducted many criminal interviews. I know Bill has too. Unless there's reason to be super aggressive, you just ask him the questions. A smart, intelligent investigator knows how to word questions and word them differently and come back and visit the same issues to get a guilty person to trip themselves up. But these guys show up, and they're very, very aggressive with this guy. And they immediately think he's lying. Why? Well, because they ask him about the green keyboard that he sold. And he's telling them, I have no idea what you're talking about. I bought two keyboards in my life. There they are. I've never sold a keyboard. They think he's lying. Then one of them says, are you telling me you didn't get $200 for that at the pawn shop? Bing, the light goes on. He goes, are you talking about a blue mixer? Well, did you take that to the pawn shop? Yes. Now I know what you're talking about, the blue mixer. But they've already got it in their mind. He's lying because when they were talking about a green keyboard, he was telling them, I have no idea what you're talking about. So now he details the whole story for them from beginning to end, the part that he's involved in, of course, and seems pretty straightforward, right? You got a pretty halfway decent deal at a secondhand store and a secondhand item. I mean, I've done that lots of times. I bet you have too. Well, that's not how the story ends, because they put him in handcuffs and they put him in the back of the car. And you would think that might be the end of it. Well, they call the secondhand store where he knows the owner and from which he bought the item. And the owner verifies every single aspect of the young man's story, down to the slightest detail. And he says, this young man could not possibly have known that item was stolen. I didn't know it. How could he know it? Now, I've spoken to a number of good cops and retired cops and ex-cops about this situation. I've always posed the same question. I already know the answer. Same thing I would have done when I was on the job. I've said, if you interviewed a potential suspect and he voluntarily gave you the same story, his story never changed one little bit, you called an independent third party who verified every aspect of his story, what would you do next? And every single person that I've asked that to who's been in law enforcement said, I let him go. When he tells me a story, it's a credible story, and it's verified by a third party, you let him go. But here in Nye County, that's not how things are done. Here in Nye County, they transported him to the jail, and they booked him on 3 felony counts with absolutely zero probable cause. And it's disturbing for me on a number of levels. Number one, I live in this community. I would like to believe that the Nye County deputies are following the law, they're using common sense, they're respecting individual rights, and they're respecting the Constitution. The idea of having probable cause for an arrest, me, is a constitutional principle. It is not open for a peace officer to violate that constitutional principle. It also protects all of us. And by this standard, by the standard of the deputy that arrested him and booked him on 3 felony charges with 0 probable cause, people who say, oh, cops overstep now and again, but it's always with people who are guilty. No, it's not with people who are guilty. This guy, innocent, never been accused of a crime, never been convicted of a crime. He's no more a criminal than you are. And he was booked on 3 felonies with no evidence. Now, the standard in Nevada law for receiving stolen property is that you, A, know. That's what it says in the statute. You know it's stolen. Clearly, that doesn't fit this story. Or B, that given the circumstances, any reasonable person would know. Not suspect, question, think about it once or no. That's what the statute says. That's the standard enacted by the Nevada legislature that you put there. That's the standard. The guy's got to know. This wasn't even a question mark. You buy something at a credible secondhand store that you've known the guy for years. You bought stuff there before. He's a respected business person. It's a respected enterprise. There's been no accusations that they traffic in stolen property. Why would anybody at a secondhand store buying a secondhand item even imagine it's stolen, no less know? And yet they violated this young man's rights. And although they knew about him for 2 weeks, they showed up late on a Friday. And of course, every cop knows this drill. If you want somebody to sit in jail, you arrest him late on a Friday. And that's exactly what happened. He spent 3 days in jail on complete bullshit charges. Now, he's a young man. And arrests are a matter of public record. So every job he ever tries to get now for the rest of his life, if it involves a background check, 3 felony arrests are going to come up. This is going to follow him now for the rest of his life because a dishonest or incompetent Nye County deputy sheriff falsely arrested him without probable cause. This could happen to you, because remember, this is a completely innocent guy. Oh, and by the way, nicest guy in the world. He's not the kind of guy to raise his voice or lie or anything like that. Nicest, easiest going guy you'd ever want to meet. I know how he, even though I wasn't present, I know how he reacted when the deputies were questioning him, the same way he would always react. You want to know the truth? Here, let me tell you what happened, man. You don't need to be a tough guy with me. Let me just tell you what happened. That could be you, or that could be me. That has been Bill. Falsely arrested after telling somebody the truth. A cop the truth and the cop lied. What's going on in this county? Where is the leadership in the sheriff's department? Where is the leadership in the sheriff's department? Does the leadership in the sheriff's department even understand how the job is supposed to be done? Because the top person hasn't really done the job. And this could be you. This could be your children affected by deputies who make these sort of obscene, unconstitutional, and illegal judgment calls. Bill?
Couple of things. First of all, I think some felonies were committed here.
Yes, they were.
Not the least of which was the officer essentially kidnapping when they took him in.
Yep.
The violation of his rights, that's a civil crime that carries a criminal penalty.
Yep.
And then also, I'm quite sure, I haven't seen it, I only learned about this today, is likely perjury on the arrest form, on the declaration of arrest, another felony. So when you were telling me this story at lunchtime today, first thing pops into my head, you want to try to establish if a crime has been committed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have reasonable suspicion. Now, there's nothing. There's reasonable suspicion. There's probable cause. There's proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right.
Reasonable suspicion can command, I can detain you to find out if there's probable cause or not.
If you're going to be able to move on to arrest.
Right, yeah. Which is probable cause, which yeah. means the facts and circumstances known to the officer would warrant a prudent man to believe a crime had been committed and the accused had committed it. Short of that, you cannot arrest. If you're still not sure after as much as an hour of investigating, you do what's called long-forming it. Fill out a report, you submit it, let the detectives decide if they're going to do anything with it. Or maybe you can do some of the investigation based on your protocol at your department. But what it came down to...
Or let the person go at that time, And when you have discretionary time on patrol, do some more investigation. If you find you want to hook him up, come back and hook him up.
If you have probable cause. So here it is. He didn't provide it. You started with reasonable suspicion. He knocked a major chunk out of that, makes a phone call to the secondhand store owner. He knocks the rest of it out. There's no longer reasonable suspicion, and it's much further from probable cause, but he jumps up to probable cause and makes the arrest. All kinds of problems with that. Exposes all kinds of problems within the law enforcement structure in Knight County, and exposes the system, the whole county, to lawsuit. And I think the district attorney should ought to step in there and put a stop to this sort of thing by charging some of these deputies.
Yes, and I would much prefer to see the sheriff address this. I'm not sure the sheriff, if I told her the story, would even see anything wrong with it because she's never really done the job.
I don't know.
So
somebody needs to be held accountable.
I hope you understand this. You could be the victim of this, and we'll be back.
Today's rant's going to be a little bit different, so let's hit it. We're not going to be talking about grinding gears today. Instead, I'm going to take my time to explain a little bit of politics. Nevada is a caucus state. We just had the Iowa caucus recently. We're moving on to the primary in New Hampshire, then on to South Carolina, which I forget if that's a primary or a caucus. I don't recall. Not my state. Not really bothered by it. Then Nevada on February 23rd. So I wanted to chat a little bit about this and how this system works. On February 23rd is the Republican caucus for Nevada. Republican caucus. The Democrats have a different day. I think it's the 20th of February. I'm not sure. I'm not a Democrat. I don't really care. This is for the Republican caucus. This is where the majority of Nye County, where I live, and I chair the Nye County Republican Party currently, that's where we are. That's what I want to talk about. At the middle school in Pahrump specifically, that we have different locations throughout the county in the northern area, in Amargosa, Beatty, Tonopah, Round Mountain, Current, Sunnyside, and Gabs. I think there are different places. We're going to just keep it to Pahrump for now. At the middle school, Rosemary Clark Middle School, which is on Blagg, just slightly north of Simpkins, way on the north end of town. Starting at 5:30 p.m. on Tuesday, February 23rd, the gates will open. You'll come in. All of the different precincts that we have in Pahrump, of which there's about 18, I believe, are going to have their own separate classroom. You'll go in. You'll find your classroom, which there will be people to help direct you to the classroom. You will sign in, and at 6 o'clock, the meeting opens. The very first order of business is you have the chair of the precinct, different than the precinct captain. They will start the meeting. You will then take nominations and have elections for a precinct captain, who then takes the meeting over, reads a few things, and then they open up the information, or open up the action for the caucus, where people will be able to talk about the candidate that they support to try to get others who are undecided to come their way, maybe some that were decided for someone else to come your way. However, there's also going to be a ballot handed out to each and every person who's in there that is signed in. That ballot, you can fill out the and check the box of the Republican presidential candidate that is your favorite, and you'll drop it into the voting box. This will go on until 8:30 p.m., at which time voting will close, and you'll have everybody who's in the precinct able to view as the box is opened, the ballots are brought out and counted, and tallies are made for every presidential candidate for every ballot that was collected at that particular precinct meeting in that precinct. All of those tallies are going to be put onto a sheet on the front of a large envelope. All of the ballots will be placed into the envelope and sealed and taped shut. The cumulative total on the front of the envelope, all of that will be picked up by various tellers. It will all be taken into a central location where all of the precincts will then be added up. That information will then be sent off to the state where they will get it from all the various counties, and then they'll be able to produce what the preference poll, the non-binding preference poll results in Nevada are. So that is on Tuesday, February 23rd, at Rosemary Clark Middle School, just north of Blagg, just north of Simpkins on Blagg on the north end of town, starting at 5:30, meetings begin at 6 p.m. You want to be there around then. If you want to come in later and just do a vote and go, as we call it, you'll be able to do that after around 6:30 p.m. There will be candidates present out in the parking, not candidates, candidate campaigns, available out there in the parking and common areas, as well as there's some various people that are out there collecting signatures on various forms for ballot measures and such as that. You'll have an opportunity to look over those things, the repeal of the tax, something about moving the county seat from Tonopah to Pahrump, about the water board, some of those things, all sorts of special interest related things that will be there. You'll have an opportunity to meander around and look. If you're interested in that sort of thing, please show up at 5:30. There's going to be a lot of people. In Pahrump, we expect 3,000 to 4,000 people to come and go at the middle school. So please don't wait till the last minute, because the poll closes, the boxes are sealed, all of the ballots are accepted and done at 8:30 p.m. So the latest you want to show up to cast a ballot is probably going to be about 8. So you can come in, find where you need to go, get signed in, show your ID, get your ballot, fill it out, and then go. Because that takes a little bit of time to traverse the whole caucus process, if you will. So with that being said, now I want to bring in my co-host, Dave Champion, and talk about some other political things.
Okay.
Now, Dave, you and I have had a number of offline topics about different political-related things, yes, especially local political-related things. And I have shared with you, as I have with the audience on a number of occasions, it's no secret, I chair the Nye County Republican Party. I've been doing it since April of 2012, so nearly 4 years. I have been elected to the post initially in a special election, and then I was reelected twice unopposed. And it's a 2-year term. I filled a 1-year term of the outgoing person that we ousted. Then I had my own 2-year term. Then I was reelected to a second 2-year term, of which I'm 1 year in roughly. And when you've asked me, or we've had these discussions about political ongoings, I really have to toe the party line. I don't, in a number of cases, I really can't, and I don't give my own personal opinion on things, because that might interfere with party business or the way that the party is looking at things. Oh,
and I can validate this, because during the last election, I marketed you, I pitched you on some things that I thought were appropriate for the Nye County Republican Party and the chair of the Nye County Republican Party to do. And correct me if I'm mischaracterizing this, I felt you agreed with personally and supported personally the strategy I was advocating. And you told me flat out, as the chair of the Republican Party, you would not do it.
No, because as I won't do anything as the chair that is in opposition to what the county party has done, or if the county party doesn't get involved in it. For instance, in the sheriff's race, we picked a horse in the primary, before the primary. But after that, at the general, that horse didn't make it. You ended up with two people who were running who were both registered Republicans, but they were running for a nonpartisan office. So no matter who we chose or didn't choose, either way, it was a losing battle. It was a losing situation for the Nye County Republican Party. So we wisely stayed out of it for the general election. Maybe we shouldn't have got involved in the primary. I don't know. That's really up to the party. Oftentimes, the party makes decision. I talk about the membership of the party. We get delegates. We get up to, I think, 288 coming up this time. We can have as many as 288 members plus alternates. And we regularly have about 50 or 60 people at our meetings. We only have a membership of about 110. Because in 2014, when we had, there wasn't a presidential poll, there wasn't nearly as many people involved in the caucus, sure, or precinct meetings. So now we expect to have more. But there are some things, some votes, some motions, some resolutions that the party membership have done that I may not personally agree with. But I don't make that known. I toe the party line. I believe having the title of chairman doesn't make me king. It makes me the ultimate servant. And I believe everybody who's involved in an organization like this is a volunteer organization, that when you get a title, it depending on how big the title is, it's how much more of a servant you really are. And I really have taken that to heart. And I've worked hard initially to get all of the bylaws changed to where you didn't have a tyrannical dictator of a chair in there, that the chair could be muzzled, could be replaced, could be removed, could be censured much more easily than they had been. Because if you're doing your job right, you should never have to worry about that.
Correct.
And so I took away the executive authority, if you will.
Perhaps if the members are doing their job right, you shouldn't have to worry about it.
And that's the idea. It should be harmonious. Anyhow, our last meeting was right in the middle of January on the 16th. They're the third Saturday of every month at 10 a.m. at our office at 3370 South Highway 160, just about a third of a mile south of Homestead on 160, south end of town. And at the end of the January 16th meeting, I called the executive committee members who were present in, and I told them that in light, we've got a lot of busy stuff coming up. We had the Lincoln Day dinner that was coming up, which we had about a week and a half ago. Then in February, we have the caucus. In March, we have the county convention. Then in April, at that meeting, because it's after the caucus and the convention, you have a whole new set of membership. It basically resets. Everybody that participated wants to be a delegate. They went through we have a new membership standard every 2 years in April. And at that meeting, state law says you have to do certain things. You have to elect certain people to different boards and this and that. So there's a lot of logistical things that have to happen legally. And at the conclusion of that meeting, I will be resigning my post as chairman. And I let the executive committee know that. I'm now coming out publicly and letting everybody know that. That towards the end of that meeting, I will be resigning and overseeing the election of a new chair. And then that new chair will be seated to finish the balance of that meeting. But I'll be staying through to make sure all of the caucus, the convention, and then all of the legalities of the first meeting after the convention are all done and concluded and properly taken care of when we open nominations and elections for a new chair. So I just want everybody to understand that. Part of the reason I'm coming out to say this is I have in the past said, look, I'm really kind of over being chair. I want to be able to do things politically without the constraints and restraints that I've got as chair. I want to be able to speak my mind on a few things. And honestly, it's quite a bit of work. And I'm a little bit burned out on doing all that work and having restraints on top of it.
Yeah.
So I will be resigning after that meeting.
It seems to some extent, you know how I feel about party politics. So it seems to me to be pretty much a thankless job.
It is thankless in a lot of ways, but you have to see the reward in what you're doing. And I have to say that there was a whole bunch of us that worked together to build the party. And it was about 18 months of working hard to build the party.
And this was during the Ron Paul revolution.
It was, yes. Okay. And then once we had it built after a year, 18 months, then it's been a little bit harder over the last 2.5 to 3 years to keep it together. Because now everybody was fighting to get somewhere. Now everybody still has that bug to fight. And, you know, we want to keep everybody happy.
Start fighting each other.
Well, not exactly. But we to some lesser extent, we want to try to find the right path for us to go on. And things have been going well. It's been set off. The ship is cruising pretty well. It's time for me to move aside and do a few other things. Allow somebody else to run the ship. So if you have any interest in doing this, it is an all volunteer job, and you start at the caucus, the precinct meetings, and then you go. And I don't know what just happened. We just had.
And okay. Come one, come all down to the, as long as you're Republican, come on down. Take Bill's place. Let him off the hook.
And you can register to vote at nygop.org. Click on the homepage. We'll be right back. Welcome back to segment 4. This is where we take a look at you, the viewers, emails, and talk about some of the stuff that you send in. On occasion, we do that, actually. Depends on how good it is. Send your emails to daveandbillshow@gmail.com. We put out there a week or two ago that we wanted to have people, you know, hey, let us know, you know, where you are, how do you see us, where do you watch us, and we got quite a few emails. It was nice. So, you know, it's nice to know where the viewership comes from and who they are, so keep sending those. If you're not local in Pahrump, if you are, you get to watch the show at 6 p.m. on Thursdays on KPVM. And here, totallyunprepared.info for everybody else, which also takes you to our YouTube channel. And that has audio, video, all of the shows that are up. We've done 52. This is show number 53.
And we have a Facebook presence.
We do. We have Facebook presence, which is Totally Unprepared. Yep. So, yeah, just search us out.
52.
You'll find us. This is 53 right here.
Okay.
52 right. Complete, 52 in the can, yes. As they say.
53 is 11 minutes and 15 seconds from being done.
That it is, yes. So let's talk a little bit about one of the emails that came in. One of our viewers who watches us on YouTube, he's back east, he asked us about the problems that we have in interpreting a couple of different federal codes on whether or not it's legal to carry a handgun into a post office.
Yes. And one of the things I liked about his email was it was clear from some of his comments that he made about things you've said and that I've said that he's been watching the show for some time. Oh, he actually commented.
He listened to your radio show years ago. He listened to my radio show years ago.
And he's taken some of the comments that we've made over time and he tied them into this issue.
Yes.
Saying, well, then therefore I presume you do.
Trying to force our hands is what he's doing.
We know you weren't, but I thought that was great.
So really what it comes down to is there's one federal regulation that says no firearms on postal property at all. And there's been a federal judge in, I believe, the Pacific Northwest that said, that's right. If you go to the post office to pick up, send mail, do any postal business, buy a money order, whatever it is, no guns on the property, which in lies another issue. Does that mean if you're going to park on the post office property, you can't even have a gun for self-protection on the way there or the way out of there? That seems to be an issue. There is another judge in a different part of the country, of the area of which I forget, that has said you just can't carry a gun in the area where the employees work, but where the post office boxes are, and, you know, if you want to pick up some forms and do whatever, as long as that's not an area where the employees work in that section, then it's okay.
Which would include the parking lot.
Which would include the parking lot and part of the building. So there is a couple of different rules that have come out of judges, plus the different rules. There's another federal statute that says that in federal buildings you can't carry a gun unless it's for this, that, or the other, or for other lawful purposes. And you would think that carrying a handgun is a lawful purpose, especially if you have a permit, say, for a concealed weapons permit, or if in your state like Texas, it's an open carry permit.
Or it's like Arizona, constitutional carry.
Constitutional carry.
And notice it doesn't say legal purpose. Lawful purpose.
It says lawful purpose.
And there's a significant distinction between legal and lawful.
There certainly is.
Lawful is very, very broad. A lawful purpose is, I would like to be able to defend myself against a violent criminal attack. That's a lawful purpose.
It basically meets constitutional muster.
Yes.
Legal, on the other hand, means it's a process that outlines what can or cannot be done.
Yes, normally controlled very strictly by, you know, the scriptures of the statute.
Right. So the long and the short of it is we don't have an answer for you. And until it reaches high enough to a court level or we get clear enough language out of Congress. Mm-hmm. There's not going to really be a clear answer on there.
And, you know, I wonder, I think the odds that this is going to get adjudicated to a resolution quickly is not going to happen.
It's not very high up there on the priority list.
You ran into somebody doing something very rare, which is open carrying in a post office.
Yes, I did.
Okay. However, for instance, I know guys that they're open carrying around town. They pull into the post office parking lot. They'll, like, put on their 5'11 tactical vest, and they go into the post office.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I can't speak to places like, you know, Minneapolis or L.A., but in a place, as an example, Pahrump, and I would even probably say Vegas as well, if an employee looks over and says, I imagine that guy under that tactical vest is wearing a handgun, they don't do anything about it. They just go about their job.
Right.
I don't see postal employees like, I wonder who's got a gun and I'm going to call somebody.
Yeah.
So I don't see this is going to get pushed to resolution anytime soon.
Yeah, I think it has to do with the environment where you're in. Which, speaking of environment, we had another viewer who lives also way out east up in Maine, ask us about we live out west, and was the Wild West really basically like what the spaghetti westerns put out there? And the shorter answer is no, not even close. And Dave, you've done some research on this over the years.
You know, one of the things that I found fascinating, sort of the epitome, especially for Hollywood, the epitome of the wild, wild west is Dodge City during the heydays of the cattle drives.
It's funny that you say that. I actually went to college for a year in Dodge City.
Oh, you really did?
Yeah. Okay. And the main thoroughfare in Dodge City is Wyatt Earp Boulevard.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, historians have found in doing their research that the crime rate for the ordinary citizens of Dodge City was almost zero. And there was the itinerant population. It was the young cowboys that would come in on the trail. And in the movies, we have, you know, the older guys playing cowboys, you know, the John Wayne. But that was really not the case. Normally, there was an older guy who was in charge of it, but the cowboys were almost universally young.
Okay. Yeah, the older guys had gotten all that piss and vinegar out of their system some time ago.
Right.
You know, now we're talking, I guess to put it in more modern terms, like a bunch of kids that got out of boot camp, you know, a bunch of sailors, Marines, Army, whatever, and you know, they're feeling real good. They got a couple of bucks in their pocket. They're going to go whoop it up.
Yeah.
Where you're not going to see the guys that have, the NCOs and the officers that have been around for a while doing that sort of thing.
And
that'd be the older cowboys.
Most of the actual working cowboys were from 15 to about 23.
Okay.
I mean, that's hard work, right? Yeah, young man's job.
Yeah.
And the historians have found that what they had in Dodge City was they had an area where if you were an itinerant, you had to stay. You couldn't go out into the residential part, okay? There was a zone for, like, the cowboy zone.
Yeah, it was almost like the Las Vegas Strip.
Yes.
You rarely ever see anybody outside of there or downtown.
And if you were a cowboy and you were caught wandering around in the residential areas, you were grabbed and sent, taken back and said, you can stay here or you can go back out to where your camp is. You're not welcome amongst the homes and the other businesses. So it was the brothels and the bars and all of that, right?
Exactly, yeah. This is the sort of thing where you had back in history the spaghetti westerns that trained all of us on what the Wild West was about. But when you came out here, you really didn't have that. And another example is like, say, the 49ers or the gold miners that came out. Those are hardworking people that were trying to get stuff done.
Yes.
And, of course, there's bad guys that will try to play on good guys at any time.
Sure. But in Dodge City, it was interesting because the researchers found that it's been too many years since I read it, but it's something like 98 or 99% of all gunfights, attempted murders, and murders were the itinerant population in that one particular part where they were all kept by the marshals.
Yeah, which, you know, that could have happened at a – they didn't have truck stops back then, but a wagon stop.
But, I mean, go figure. You give somebody who's, say, 18, alcohol, money, and guns –
it's a party.
And they're away,
you know?
They're away from home, no parental controls or guidance. They've been out on the...
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And what you would expect to happen, where do we see that today? Gangs.
Sure.
You know? You don't see... There's the expression, OG, old gangster.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see OGs banging on the street.
No.
The ones that are out there shooting, you know, doing the... You know, running around shooting. they're all 16, 17, 18 years old.
Right.
It is part of that age group and what they do. And I'm not excusing that sort of conduct, don't get me wrong, but in every society, that's been the hellraisers, and those were the hellraisers, to answer his email, in the Old West.
Yeah, so no, it was not the spaghetti western. It wasn't John Wayne and Wyatt Earp and all the great things that we saw in the movie Tombstone and being a huckleberry and all that good stuff.
Clint Eastwood, yeah.
Yeah. So there was something else that you had in an email that came out.
You know, one of the things that people say when they oppose open carry is they say, you know, well, somebody, usually anti-gunners say this, you know, well, if you're carrying a gun on your hip, which, of course, you know, I carried openly for years, right, and still do at times, you know, somebody's just going to come up and take your gun.
Yeah.
And, you know, millions upon millions upon millions upon millions of people in America carry guns every day.
Yep.
And I'm excluding security and law enforcement. I'm just talking about regular citizens.
I'll put yourself into a mindset. If you're a bad guy and you see just Joe Citizen with a gun, if you're in the shoes of the bad guy, that's likely the last person you're going to go after because they've got a gun, and you are not in the business of getting shot.
Right, right. And they also have to keep in mind, I think this is hard for law-abiding citizens to understand, the criminal understands you can shoot him, and you'll walk.
Yeah.
If he shoots you, he's going to jail for many, 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 many years, right? So there's that dynamic in the mind of the criminal. He can shoot me and sleep in his own bed tonight.
Yeah,
right?
They've really got to be off to try to get a gun off of an armed person.
And criminals who've been taken into custody later for committing a crime have sometimes said, like video will show, well, oh, you were there 3 hours earlier. Why didn't you commit your crime then? Oh, I saw a couple guys open carrying. We decided we'd come back later.
Yeah, back another time.
Now, if you cover your gun and conceal it, then they're going to do the crime.
Right.
Now you might have to get in a shootout.
Yeah.
I would prefer the, I'm not going to do the crime because I see guns.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But of all the millions and millions of people that carry guns every day, I now have read the story where the second open carrier had his gun taken from him by a criminal.
Yeah, the first
two,
one.
Two,
the
in the whole nation.
One, in 2010 or 2011.
Yes, right. Yeah. That was and some then, punk kid. He the guy actually came up with a gun, stuck a gun in his face and took his gun.
Yeah, which, you know, I can see that. If you're a bad guy with a gun and you're going to point a gun at somebody else to take theirs, I understand. But this second one, there, we don't know. There were two bad guys, one good guy with a gun. They came up behind him. Yeah. And they got his gun away from him, and it wasn't clear whether or not the bad guys in this case had a gun or not.
Yeah.
They certainly had one when they left, but we don't know if they had one beforehand.
Yeah. The article simply says they had the element of surprise, they came up behind him, they demanded his gun, and one of them took his gun.
Yeah, with a little bit of hands-on and pushed around. And
I imagine that's exactly what it was.
So what we're talking about here is somebody that owns a gun that maybe wasn't necessarily should have. Because we have what's called condition yellow, where you're alert, you know what's going on.
And you and I both consider there are people, despite the right to keep and bear arms, people who should know enough about themselves to know they're not that person.
I actually recommended to one student once upon a time, you should not carry a gun. You have nothing, no business doing this.
Yeah, and I've met people like that too. I said, you're right, but perhaps consider this carefully.
Yeah, so this guy was in what I like to say condition brown with his head up his back door, not paying attention likely. We don't know the story. It's quick to judge, but twice now.
Twice in the whole nation.
So anyhow, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Take care.